I'm good. I'm doing all right. How are things at your place for lockdown now?
Regular things, you know.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of illustrating a book, so just working on that.
Nice. Sweet, man. Well, do you got about, like, maybe a half hour to answer some questions? Sick.
Yep.
All right. So I'm honestly super excited to have you a part of this again. And to be able to at least talk to you. It'd been awesome to be able to still get everybody together, but I think going forward, doing things over the phone is probably the safest bet.
Absolutely, man. Different times, so
yeah,
nothing stops. You just got to keep it moving.
Exactly. You just change the way you do it. That's all. But I'm really excited to introduce Leon Robinson, a.k.a. Eclipse. If you don't know, man, Crown of Thorns, Live and Direct, The Boom Spot, Art of Eclipse, Hip Hop Homage, the I Was There documentary. I'm sure there's a whole list of things that I could go on about with your accomplishments, man. But I'm really happy to have you be a part of this. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for including me.
Basically, I wanted to revisit the Hip Hop Portrait series again, and this time kind of address it in a way to not just pay homage to the people that I respected, but to put that together into a book now and showcase that to as many people as I can about Hamilton's hip hop. And of course, the book wouldn't be complete without having you a part of that. And so I wanted to ask, just right off the hop, when were you first introduced, or what brought you into hip hop here in Hamilton?
So my introduction to hip hop was pretty well on the outset of when it occurred, because I'm born in 73 and hip-hop was born in 73.
Yeah.
So I feel like the energy was just bedded at that point. But I was a youngster, and one of my brother's wife's brother, so I guess would make my brother-in-law, I guess, something like that.
Yeah.
He was a DJ for Sunshine, so it was a DJ crew that would spin at Roller World.
Okay.
So the roller skating culture was early in the hip-hop vibes, and they were getting records from New York, and they were getting a lot of the music. It wasn't coming through on radio, you know?
So right.
They were actually the tastemakers at the time, and I just happened to be right place, right time, and I was a shorty, so I had to go everywhere my older brothers went.
Right.
So I was like the youngest in the crew, and I was learning how to break dance, and I got a pressing of The Message, Grandmaster Flash.
Nice.
Spirits 5. So it was literally that, The Message, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
I just felt it.
Oh.
Before that, we were skateboarding. You know, I came up and rocking the AC/DC shirts and all of that, but when I got The Message, it was like, oh, okay, this is me. Like, this is for me. I could see where my identity was, you know what I mean? I could
for
see
sure.
It started to just, you know, be everything. So the breaking was my first love. I wasn't writing rhymes yet. I got into the, you know, the break dancing.
Yeah.
And we'd be breaking in the middle of Roller World. And there was a group called Tyler's Connection, which was a break dance group put on by Mr. Tyler, an older gentleman that had came from the States but lived in Hamilton. He put together a squad of breakers and whatnot. And
oh, that's
I was
sick.
There for a little short time with that crew. But then where I was at was Oriole Crescent. So it was East End Government Housing.
Yeah,
and we formed a little crew with some dudes from Churchill, from around the rec center. So we'd be breakdancing in Churchill in the gym there. And then we started doing like little breaking exhibition and demos outside of like Robinson's and Kresge's and the Bay and whatever. So they would hire us and we would breakdance for them. And then one year we got to breakdance for Brian Mulroney at like Hamilton Place.
What?
And we all had these purple Adidas suits and I had like the Kango to match. And
yeah.
I remember going into the McDonald's and we all had the gear on, and I'm, you know, around then the movies were out and the commercials. It was all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just chopping shorties on the corner. It was like, yo, it was like, you know, your first superstar moment where it's like, you know what I mean? These girls are just like running us down and we just felt famous, you know what I mean? We just had the culture. It was just living that culture, you know?
Hell so, yeah, man. Oh, that's
that was
dope.
My introduction to hip-hop, man.
Dude.
And in that time, there was everything. So we started breakdancing. I remember breakdancing to Rock Box in front of the auditorium at school, and all the teachers were going crazy, and we had the mats out, and we were doing flips, and you know
yeah.
what I mean? It was just, it was everything. You started seeing all.
Yeah, yo, you know, it's funny that I even remember in high school, there was still a good amount of B-boy culture. even when I was in elementary school. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm not seeing it as much. I know there's dancers out there in Hamilton still rocking it, but
it's about to be an Olympic sport, so yeah, you'll see people going back to it.
That's true. That's a very good point.
It's now, it's like, where will you go with it? Battle of the Year? You
know, right.
That was big for a while, and people would run to you. It would go to Germany, Japan, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that it's an Olympic sport, I think you'll start to see it come back. People are starting to get back to it.
I was so hyped when I heard that, man.
Yeah, that and skateboarding, so
yeah,
it's dope. Good to see them moving along with the culture and seeing that these things have been around for decades now. And,
you know,
that
exactly.
was the thing with hip-hop. You know, they would say it's going to be a fad and they yeah. couldn't wait. You know, they killed it off so many times. The breaking aspect with Captain Crunch or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
They put them in a commercial and they'd be like, okay, breakdancing's dead and let's move on to what makes money from the culture. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So let's just stick to the records and whatever else, you know?
Yeah, that fad's now crept into every little facet of music today.
That's it. It's the know? Number one, man.
Exactly.
It's on all continents. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's the voice of the young, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
that's
man.
The amazing aspect of it. You know, whatever they thought it was going to be, you know, we kept a control on it, allowed it to kind of perforate around the world, you know,
yeah,
even
man.
Though they tried to change it up in so many ways. And, you know, they still have a good hold on it in the way of the music aspect, but the culture is
but
what
the culture,
was
yeah.
saying, right? Like, you know, they can never kill the culture.
No, so. It's still young, too. Like, it's still
so young.
Doing. Yeah, it's
growing. We're just starting to see our first wave of elders in it, the legends.
For
and,
real,
you know,
yeah. Yeah, more and more I've been hearing that conversation of, like, top rappers over 40 kind of deal, right?
Yeah, 20 years, 25 years. This album dropped 20
yeah.
years ago. This album dropped 25 years ago. It took a while for that to happen.
Right? Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's amazing. So this has just been your life. You know, some guys I ask, how long have you been active in the scene? And it's like, no, man, just even from what you were just describing, that's heavy as everything, man. You were born
it's
the year
been,
it was born,
it's
right?
It's been my life, man.
Yeah,
even,
man.
Even in this age, I've never really put it down. It's still one of those beats that kind of pushed me along. From then, I got right out of high school, opened the Boom Spot pretty well, you know? I got into doing my own clothing line. While I was in high school, I was airbrushing clothing for people, so I'd be going to jams and people would see me in my gear and be like, yo, that's dope. Where'd you get that? Thinking that I ordered it from the States or whatever. I'd be like, no, I made it.
Nah, man.
Like, oh, can you make me one? So that's when I got my entrepreneurial spirit because,
that's
you know, I'd be doing a shirt, $40, $60, and it's hand over fist. People are like, yo, let me get one. I can't keep up. So
yeah,
then I was like, man, I got to screen print some of this because the flavors that I'm giving out, I got to be doing it. It's taking 5-6 hours to do one.
Yeah.
And I get to screen print them and run it. So that's where I started my own clothing line called Projects. And I started screen printing shirts. And I'm all city because I'm at clubs and I'm dancing. And I'm pretty known as a pretty good dancer. So I'm meeting everybody from on the mountain. And that's what the thing with hip hop, we all could connect around that. So I'm meeting people from Oakville, Burlington, Mississauga, you know what I mean? We go to jams, wherever, and I'm known as one of the dancers out there. So, yo, you got to battle Dwight and Dwayne, or you know what I'm saying? And so, okay, well, let's meet up. We're out there battling and stuff. So I'm starting to meet people all around the Golden Horseshoe, kind of. Well, not really that out Buffalo that way. We would go out to the shop, but not really connect with the people out there. But going towards Toronto and Pickering and Ajax, like, we're meeting people, you know? So
through that,
people started picking up my clothing a little bit. A friend of mine, God bless and rest in peace to Greg Preed, but he was the dude that ran Crafty Grooves up the mountain, and he had a little store up on Brucedale there, and I met him. He had like a skateboard kind of graffiti type vibe to his clothing, and I was doing like a graffiti type hip hop vibe with mine. He wanted to get a screen printing press. If you want to pitch in on it, we'll both go half on it. We'll just own it. And, you can both do our own lines on it, you know what I mean? As well as we can start getting some jobs. And I was like, okay, cool, let's do it. So we both put up half the bread. And the spot we were up on the mountain just wasn't conducive to business because it was off the beaten path, you know?
Right.
I was like, man, we got to move this downtown, you know?
And that's when
we stayed up there. Yeah, we stayed up there for a few more months. We started to do our lines. He did his, I did mine, and then we moved it down to our first spot was 125 King Street East, and then we were there for a few years across from the Denningers there. And that was the first location. After about 2 years or so, it wasn't making funds the way we thought it would, you know.
Yeah,
a little time to come and start to be able to take care of both of us, you know. So
for sure, yeah.
Refused to go and get some work and be able to make money. So yeah, he ended up wanting to leave the business. So I bought him out and I kept the name and kept the business going. And then I moved up the block to 181 King Street East.
Yeah.
I was there for another 4 or 5 years and then moved up to 277.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That was the next one owned on King and Catherine. And that was the last one. It was the big, big spot with the big signs and stuff like that. And,
I think that was the first time I was at the Boop Spot, was at that location.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we did all types of stuff. We made fashion shows. I was on the BMG street team, so I was working for the record labels and promoting hip-hop. And we would do jams and put on shows, and we brought people in. And I was working for BMG, so we ended up bringing the Alcoholics through to the X-Club and stuff like that. So doing the radio show Live or Direct with me and Realistic. We did Concrete Canvas, which was the graffiti showcase that we did on top of Jackson Square, which was a 4 Element hip hop festival over a weekend, and that was pre everything. So one of the first weekend hip hop festivals in Ontario.
When you think back to some of these classic shows and the beginnings of really kind of bringing this culture to a serious level in the city, how do you think the scene has changed from then till now? Do you think there's been like a positive growth, or do you feel?
I'll be 100%. There was nothing like the vibe of when that was occurring because, to be honest, I was a positive push in that, and I made sure that I was very inclusive. Mm-hmm. I allowed any and anybody that had skill. I was not exclusive. I wasn't, territorial.
Yeah.
If you had skills and you were coming in from Sarnia or London, like Water was from London,
yeah,
you came through, open arms, like, get up, you know what I'm saying?
And yeah.
It was very, very important for me to be, unbiased. I mean, if you was whack, I was like, I was also on some,
It
doesn't fit the stage for this year, but get better next year.
Yeah.
You still got to curate the thing. You still got to curate the culture because you got people that aren't really seeing what this is about. That's their first time partaking, right? So
yeah,
if they're going to come out and sit up on top of the mall for the weekend and you want to showcase, but also give people that are just up and coming at stages a spotlight to express themselves as well, right?
So, oh, yeah.
It was just so much of a community. And then the way I programmed Live and Direct and Realistic, it was conscious hip-hop,
Yeah.
And we tried to showcase and highlight the best parts of hip-hop. Obviously, you had your MOPs and Mobb Deep and whatever,
So,
you spot the street life culture to it as well. It was good balance, And then with the store, you had the ability to sell the mixtapes and the graffiti magazines and the spray cans and the tools and,
So
there was a lot of clubs that you could, access at different nights and different weeks at different spots. And
so that's a big difference from now.
Yeah. It was a very much a community feel. And trust me, some of those spots, they weren't open to hip hop. So I would go in and build with them and talk to them and show them what it was. And do you have a little bit of cachet because I had the business? Okay. So you can start to say, well, this people's going to come. And,
right.
They could kind of see what the vibe is going to be. And then you do it one or two times and the night goes off successful. There's no fear. There you go. You got a foot in the door and you can build from there, right?
So, yeah, man. Which is always the case too, right? I've felt even for myself with some of the shows I've done, even still after all these years of there being hip-hop shows at these venues, is you still deal with a little bit of that hesitation.
Apprehension. Yeah. And then there's times where, some stuff does show up there and it spills over, right?
But it's true, yeah.
Due to the fact of who I was in the community and the respect, it was like Concrete Canvas that we were. And there was a time when there was Bloods and Crips, Asian Bloods and whatever. It was very prevalent. There was a lot of fights, but they would be up there on top of the square and nothing would really pop off. One time it popped off and I went over to them real, real quick and rapidly. It just, because there was other people that, some of my older brothers and sisters and people, So it just got squashed real quick. And people wouldn't really come there with that too much,
Yeah.
So that's one of the good things. It's like, just having that respect level where people know that, this is so-and-so putting it on behalf of the whole community. And we don't want to mess it up for everybody else. So we would make sure that we didn't handle no type of issues or beefs at
the
spot,
For sure. Yeah. I felt Steel Gold had a bit of a that same vibe for me, because that was my first foot in the door, was through Steel Gold, to get in with the community here. Yeah, I look back even just from now till even then, which was only maybe about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, not that long ago, really. The community that was there, that was what was the greatest, is you could, every first Thursday of every month, you'd see everybody kind of roll through and say, what up? As venues died off, and a few people have gone on to discuss about how living expenses nowadays makes it difficult to go to shows every night.
Or that in the age, right?
Like, yeah,
like,
that
I'm
too.
47 now,
exactly,
right? Like,
right?
I don't really find myself in a club, you know what I mean? And I'm not rhyming no more. And not to say I'm not rhyming anymore. I'm still writing. I still love putting a pen to paper. And
oh, yeah.
I aspire to maybe get back in the studio and put together a nice solo album at some point, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, back in the day, it was, we still want to get out to the shows, so-and-so's passing through or whatever.
Exactly.
Now I still got, you know, my sons are writing and performing. And,
yeah, so. I'm going to say, yeah, they're the prime age now to start getting ready to want to do
absolutely,
shows.
Absolutely, right? And now with the experience that I have and the connects and whatnot, like the other day I'm sitting here and I just threw up a little snippet of my son beat and something that he did online.
Dude.
And Dice Raw from The Roots hits me up and is like, yo, that's dope. Let me get a package of beats from your son. You know what I mean? And it's
what?
Like, wow. And I'm like,
what?
I'm telling him, like, you don't know what we would have did back in the day for these.
Oh my God.
Stuff like that, you know? So,
dude, I'd be losing my mind. I'd be losing my mind.
My son didn't get it because he didn't know who it was, right?
Right.
So he's just like, oh, he gave me all these little, like, light beats. I'm like, nah, man, we need some boop. He's like, but that's not what I do, Dad. So I'm like, all right, cool. It's granted, you know? So,
But
he's working on some music right now. That's just,
that's
just
amazing.
Incredible. Like, I constantly, I'm just listening through his door as I create. Okay, yo, he's got to drop this.
And, yeah. You know,
and he's holding on to a lot of his stuff. But,
oh,
you know,
man.
Slowly but surely, he's been talking about an EP to drop. So.
Oh, dude, I'm excited. I'm excited. I love seeing the progress of your children and seeing how you and your wife both have been such a positive influence on them. It's amazing to see their growth, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of them were, you know, in Queen's Belly as she was on stage or in the studio. So,
well, yeah, man, I mean, yeah.
For Ezekot, like, he plays piano by ear. The other day, he found my guitar downstairs, and within 3 days, he picked it up, and I'm hearing him pluck away and playing stuff, and I'm like, wow. You know, I had lessons and whatnot, and I'm not as proficient. Meanwhile, he just picks it up, and he's gone with it, and also.
Yeah, man.
It's amazing.
That's awesome. I got to ask this one now. There's two questions. So, you've been a part of so many shows by now in this scene. Do you have any that stand out for you, even just either performing or just outside of performing, like just watching and seeing somebody that you really loved come through?
Okay, there's a few. The first one was Public Enemy coming to Carmen's or Michelangelo's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so on the hilltop, Public Enemy came through, and I was dancing for a group called Two Wise at the time. Me, my dance partner Walker, Papa Cha, and then a couple other people from the crew are in our dressing rooms getting ready to do the show, you know, because it was before the show. And our dressing room doors just explodes open, and Flavor Flav busts into our dressing room, freaking out about, why did we steal the chicken?
What?
Why did we steal the KFC? And we're all looking, and it's Flavor Flav, and they're fully stark raving mad, going, yo, B, who got the chicken, yo? Who took our bucket of chicken? And we're like, what the hell is going on? So we're looking for cameras. Yo, this can't be real.
You know? Right.
And then one of the S1Ws come behind him. He's got the chicken tucked under his arm. He's like, yo, Flav, we got it. Come on, man.
Oh, my God.
He gets out of our room, and you know what I mean? And we were just like all looking at each other like, what the
fuck? What?
Yo, what is this? So, you know, we went on and did the show, and, you know, it was just an amazing
first
time seeing Public Enemy live, and we're opening for them, and we got to watch from the, like, side of the stage, so.
That's dope.
Just amazing, you know? So
that's
that was
dope.
That was one of the best, you know what I mean, memories. But then after that, my first time rocking a mic was opening for Naughty by Nature and Black Sheep at the Pavilion 3. Shit. So down at the Pavilion 3. They were down there, and I'd been writing rhymes, but I hadn't actually performed live anywhere, you know, so I got to perform I guess they opened the mic for some freestyles that I was rocking, and that's the first time people knew I rhymed. So it was just like I was getting mad love and props. And
that's
I remember I got a big up from Drez. I guess he had seen that, you know what I mean?
Man.
Seen me rocking and gave me some props and whatever. And they had a hotel not far from the spot, and they were saying, yo, meet up and we could, you know, kick rhymes or whatever, whatever. And we went and we were hanging out there waiting like rupees. I remember Mr. Long came through with a couple girls, and he's like, yo, these n****s hanging out here. Y'all need to get out of here. My first, like, feeling like a goofy sucker. And I was young, so we just had to leave. And, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, yo, I'm never going to get to rhyme in front of Drez.
Oh, man.
And them times, you're just wanting to get put on, you know, hoping somebody recognizes you and you can get a record. You know,
exactly,
you know,
right?
So.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
And then the most memorable and happiest moment of opening for somebody, I would say, was opening for KRS at the Pepper Jack.
Yeah.
When KRS was there, and I gave him that painting. And the next day, he's like, I told him, oh, shit, I had mine. I wanted you to sign it. So he's like, yo, take my number and stuff. And he hit me with the number. And the next day, I went over to his hotel, and it was just me and him sitting in the hotel lobby and talked for about 45 minutes to an hour. And he signed mine. And
we were just
me and him just kicking it, you know what I mean? And that was, like, just dope because I remember walking to Red Lobster when I used to work there with my Walkman, you know what I mean, listening to his album on repeat, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was just dope to just be able to sit there with him, and it's just me and him chopping it up, you know? So
That's crazy, man. Yeah, that would be an experience.
Yeah, but then beyond that, I had J.Ru in my shop doing an autograph session. I had Dale the Funky Homo Sapien in my shop.
Yeah.
I had Damian Marley. We brought Sean P. And, you know, for that show, me and Ray Hunter brought him out. And we had Ed O.G. Yeah, just mad people, man. So
one show that stands out for me that is always a funny memory. You and I had already known each other a little bit, but this was my first experience of, like, actually hanging out with you for a little bit. It was the Fife Dog Show. And I had my first portrait series up at
Casbah
Lounge. Yeah. And somebody had stolen your portrait. It was off the wall, and I just kind of, like, walked over. I was just asking you, like, hey, man, did you happen to just, like, take your portrait off the wall for just to, like, show somebody or something? And you were just like, no, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And we walked over, and yours was the only one missing.
I remember it, man.
Yeah,
I remember
man.
It. And so back up a little bit. There was, I don't want to put names in it, but somebody that owned a store in the area was there, a female. And she was with one of her friends who was a male. And he was giving me compliments, okay, whatever, you know what I'm saying?
So when
it went missing and you came to me, it wasn't accusatory, but it seemed like that because you were like, well, who else would take it?
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, what do you mean? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But so me feeling like, okay, this dude thinks I stole a portrait of me or whatever, you know what I mean? I'm like, yo, that's whack. So I started to kind of do my, you know, Inspector Gadget thing
right there.
And came word that, oh, I think Shorty took it. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I left the party. I walked up to their store. She was there alone with another girl, and I was like, yo, what happened to the portrait that was there? And at first, they were like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, nah, man, come on. I said, y'all know me and who I am in the city, and you know that I'm not no thief and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, you know, my name isn't looking good right now because all the portraits are there. The only one that's missing is me, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
And then so she fessed up and was like, okay, well, yeah, dude took it. So if anything, I'll get him to bring it back in within a couple. I don't know how long it took, but half an hour or so.
Like, I remember you leaving, and then literally, like, Fife didn't even start. Like, the openers.
Yeah, I filmed all the Fife.
Yeah,
right, so,
the openers were still performing, and I'm just kind of like, you know, sitting there in the crowd paying attention. Then you just kind of like, boom, it's right in my hands. I'm like, whoa, what the
what?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, I thought that was hilarious. When I seen it was missing, my first thought was, oh, he's just showing some people this. That's cool.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm an artist, so I would never take somebody's off the wall and show somebody. You don't do that as an artist. If anything,
But then when you reacted the way you reacted, like, what the f***? No, I don't know. I was just like, oh, shit. What the...
that wasn't a good look.
Yeah.
No way, shape, or form. You know what I mean? But, yeah. I'm glad things worked out the way it did, and we were able to track it down and get it back. back, and you know, now I have it, right?
Like, yeah,
you
man.
Blessing me, you ended up blessing me with it anyways, but you know what I'm saying? And you had already told me before that, you know, it's
yours
or whatever, right? So that's why I was like, you know what I mean? You'd already told me, so that's why when we're like, oh, did you already take it? I was like, nah.
Oh, yeah. Like, why would I take it? I'm already getting it.
So why would I take it? You're like, oh, it's not there. I'm like, it's not gonna work. So I was like, all right, man.
Yeah, I look back at that as a very funny night, to be honest. Yeah, but it was amazing even just like that. And then being there early enough, I got to see, not really like I was eavesdropping, but you had started your interview with Fife.
Yeah, we had an incredible interview, man.
Dude.
I mean, it exists on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just nice. And he signed my book and I gave him a copy. And like,
he was so nice. I got to talk to him a little bit after he was leaving on the way to his car out front. He's just
super down to earth, man.
Dude, yeah, it was incredible.
That's one of the main things that I've been blessed with doing my book, Hip Hop Homage, and meeting all these cats. And, you know, I got to meet Black Thought, which is one of my top MCs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
just
man.
To sit down with him, same thing. It was just me, him, and my book, you know? And
yes.
He's just going off about how dope it is and how Questlove's going to love it when he gets his copy and stuff like that. And,
dude.
You know, same thing. Big Daddy Kane, I got to sit down with. Mos Def, I remember when I met Mos Def to give him a copy of his book. His road manager said, yo, don't ask him for a picture because most don't take pictures, you know? So I was like, all right, cool. So we went back and he's looking at his page and, you know, and it was bad because Talib was in the change room at the same time, you know? And everybody's clowning on him like, yo, how come Talib in the book? And I'm like, I don't know. It's like, you know, I was just doing, you know, most at the time, you know? So, anyways, he's looking through and Mos is like, yo, grab me my hat, man. Let me get a picture with this brother. So he ended up taking a picture with me.
That's
so
dope.
I ended up getting that, you know? So
that's dope.
Yeah, me, Talib, and Mos are in the picture. And it was just like those moments when artist U Rivera are giving you props. He's like, yo, this is so dope. And he's flipping through the pages. And you know what I mean? He's like, man, like, what made you do this? You know, that's what always the question is. I'm like, oh, man, just my love for hip hop. Like, you know, all what you guys have given us in the way of your music and stuff like that.
Yeah, man.
That's dope, man. That's a blessing, you know? So,
yeah. I can relate, man, because honestly, you've been a big inspiration for me with this whole series because of that book. That was, you know, one of the also first introductions of like getting to meet you and sit down. And I remember buying it from you. We were chatting in your truck the one day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you've always been a down to earth and inclusive person. That's the feeling I've always gotten from you. You've been a very open arms kind of guy with hip hop here in the community. It's a pleasure to actually be able to do these kind of conversations with everybody in the community right now. Because for me, being able to do this for the community that I'm in right now and being able to give thanks again, because, you know, once again, dude, I'm doing your guys' portraits. You're all going to get them. They're all yours. Because I still, to this day, like, there's so much love for what everybody has done and brought to this scene here.
It's almost like what drink champs are doing, right? Giving people the roses while they can smell it, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it's important, man. And that's what I was doing with my book. And that's what I do. That's what hip-hop is, man. The spirit of hip-hop is just bringing people together. You know, I mean, if you look at, you know, what was happening with the Black Spades and all the different gangs in New York and stuff like that, like, it brought heads together
to
break instead of fight, you know what I mean? To people from, you know, one borough would go to another, to the house parties, to the park jams and all of that, and you could be out there and exist and not fight because, you know what I'm saying, you're in the spirit of this thing that connected us, you know?
Yeah, so, man.
It's the same thing here, you know what I mean? Like, this music has brought mad people together. I remember as Crown of Thorns, we sent 5 CDs out to one of our sisters out in Taiwan, and would you believe there was a Crown of Thorns logo painted on the side of a building, probably about 30 feet high, just off 5 CDs, you know what I mean? She took a picture, and when she sent back the picture, I'm like, what is that, Photoshop? She's like, no! Somebody painted this on the side of a building, like, you know what I mean?
That's crazy.
I was like, yo, it's nuts to just know the power of a vibe or just, you know what I mean, anything you do in regards to that, like, it's a spirit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hip-hop truly is a spirit that once it's connected and once it's in you, heads will recognize it.
Yeah, man.
And it's just infectious, you know, it becomes energy emotion, which is synergy, you know what I mean? And,
yes.
And it just spreads, you know, so...
It's that's what I mean.
That's a fear. You know, that's a fear of a lot of, they try to tamp it down and say it's not popular anymore and yep. try to just take the worst elements of it because they know it's a unified force. You know yep. what I mean?
Oh, yeah, man. When people are together, and especially in this kind of community with hip hop, for myself, there's never been another culture or community that's made me feel more welcome and at home than hip hop. You know,
that's the beauty of it, man. Exactly. Do you not see like some of these newscasters and shit that drop little Jay-Z bars and stuff, and they got Wu-Tangs on their laptops and stuff? And,
yeah,
and
man.
But that's what it is.
That's hip-hop the power.
Is growing, so now hip hop is in the boardroom and people understand things.
Yeah,
so,
man.
You know, the gatekeepers that would normally be inhibit the growth of it are now saying, "Nah, let that happen. Let that come through." You know what I mean? Because you know what I'm saying, like. They were raised on the culture. They understand it. You know what I mean?
They
got lessons through the music the same way we did, right? So
yep. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's amazing seeing the younger generation. I mean, I'm only in my early 30s myself, so I'm not... I feel like I'm in the middle ground still, but but seeing a lot of these younger guys in their early 20s and late teens and the work that they're putting in and the way that there's this new wave that I've been finding, so... We've had this like rush of trap and pop being pushed in different ways in rap right now. And there's some of it that I think is amazing. Some of it is obviously just reproduced for a pop purpose. Mm-hmm. But there's this, you know, yin to that yang that's happening where you're seeing a lot of this younger culture looking at the older stuff again. Mm-hmm. They're looking past what's on the radio, what's being pushed as popular, and they're finding this new connection and bringing it into a new element with antiquity, basically, you know? They're looking back at the past and creating something new with it, and it's amazing. I'm excited to see a lot of this stuff, because you're seeing these guys who are over 40, too, putting out more albums.
Yeah, man.
Dude.
Busta Rhymes new drop.
Dude. Like, you know,
Royce the 5'9"'s drop. Like,
dude, know, that Busta album. That Busta album is wild. Wild.
Albums, yeah.
Man. Yeah. I appreciate you doing this for me, man. And I'm excited once again to have you be a part of the Portrait series.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your work and time and energy.
Much thanks, man. Much
for
thanks.
For pics wise, I guess you just pull down pics off of our socials that appeal to you or something. Is that who you're going to work from? Or?
I am. At first, I was doing photos with people outside, but that's kind of gotten very difficult to organize. So yeah. I've been pulling down from Facebook and from socials and finding good ones, though.
I have no doubt you'll find something dope to work with. I've been watching the ones you've created for everybody, and I've been enjoying them. So,
awesome, man! Awesome. No, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And yeah, man, we'll be in touch soon.
All right, brother.
All right.
Enjoy your evening. Good talking to you, man.
You too. Thank you very much.
All right, peace.
What you just heard was the Demon interviewing Eclipse. You can find more of him online, eklipzart.com. And we're just going to get into this instrumental interlude provided by Al the Jazzmatic, name of the track Fakin' Jacks, followed by Demon's interview with Stealth Elements, which I would like to mention was one of the first local acts I spun when I got to radio about 14 years ago. Again, apologies for the audio.
ワルクマンスタイル。
Email, you gotta be able to do that.
Man. Well, I am the Demon. This is Open Season Late Night, and we are here with Stealth Elements with that awesome intro.
That's me.
And,
what's this interview been like? A year in the making?
Yeah.
Longer?
Well, I mean, Stealth is lived up to the name. For, like, anybody that doesn't know who the hell he is from the city, you're living under a rock, listing off just, like, the three big ones that I remember: Hell Cartel, Premium Plus, and High Cats.
All three of those, man.
Yeah.
That was me.
Yes. Yes.
And, I've had an interesting journey, let's put it that way. You know, that's the best way I can say it.
Yeah, man. Well, okay, so get right into it then. Like, what was the first thing that introduced you to Hamilton hip hop?
Hamilton hip hop in general. Obviously, you know, growing up, I had a taste for hip-hop, but I liked all genres of music, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I hung out with a lot of different people at school and stuff like that, and I don't know if you would remember this name. I'll give him an early shout-out. To be honest, man, at the time in Hamilton, this was even before Hell Cartel, I don't know if you remember Jay Miller. At the time, he went by Babes 5 back in the Tongue Twisted days.
Yeah.
Me and Jay went to high school together. And he actually used to do music with Traverse, I believe, here and there. I don't know if you remember Traverse, who was the DJ for the High Cats for a little bit there. Me and Jay used to hang out in high school, and we actually had a computer class. It was like computer science or something like that in high school. In that same class was Dave Tivador, Tibbs from Premium Plus, who I also went to high school with. Jay Miller, he was already rapping and making music at that time. And he showed me the Tongues Twisted website. So this was right around, I don't know whether it was before, close to the hype of the 8 Mile, a little bit before that, I believe, when people were like, well, you know, because you were on the website with me.
Yep.
That's actually how we met. Tongues Twisted was probably like the very first thing that I was introduced to Hamilton hip-hop-wise, and that's where a lot of the networking started. And it's kind of funny because you look at it all these years later, and a lot of those people I'm still in contact with. You know, that's where I met, obviously, Tongues, who goes by Sean Caesar now on Facebook and other things, and he's still doing his photography and stuff. So I would say Tongues Twisted was my first introduction. When I really fell in love with it, though, would probably be... This was really before any shows were popping in Hamilton, dude. Like, there's, like, shows, and even, to be honest, at that time, we weren't even old enough to get into bars anyway.
So
that's dating how long we've actually been doing this. I remember Tongues threw a show. I don't know if you were there or not, but Tongues threw a show at Grimsby Public School. Man.
Yep.
That's back in the day where you had to rent all the equipment.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, it was almost like an 8 Mile thing. So at that time, the Hamilton hip-hop scene, at least the part of it that I was involved with, I know there was obviously, like, Eclipse and those guys probably doing things, but I didn't know those guys at that time, you know?
Well, yeah, that's like what you're saying. We were all a little too young to get into the bars and clubs down there where they were doing
things. Yeah, so
particularly
knew that side of the Hamilton hip-hop scene yet, at least. So at that time, it was a lot more beat-orientated, you know? Like, maybe real beef. I would definitely, now looking back on it, it's childhood manufactured beef.
Oh, yeah.
If beef is in, like, a word, it was, you know, that was the thing to do. You've said a couple of times, like, my crew and your crew, we didn't like each other, but did we really not like each other? Or was it was just you were a different username on the website that we wanted to battle?
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Time it was, that was my introduction to hip-hop. It was actually started with text battling. And then I bought, like, a really crappy mic at home and started making some songs. I remember it was just after September 11th, to be honest, because my first song I rapped about September 11th, and it was really weird. That was my introduction to Hamilton hip-hop.
So,
dating me back.
So, yeah, so then you are born and raised Hamilton, right?
Yeah, born and raised Hamilton.
There's maybe only, I want to say, like, a handful out of the whole series that are actually straight up from Hamilton.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really cool to learn how a lot of people just kind of gravitated to this city.
Yeah.
You know, even without maybe knowing fully the, like, the music aspect to it all.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think the reason that people came to Hamilton back then is a total different contrast to why people came here now. I know
saying,
and a few people per se. I think now it's funny because now people are moving to Hamilton for opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? Back then, a lot of people were moving to Hamilton because it was cheaper than Toronto or the other areas. You know, it was kind of
affordable.
Total, like, polar opposite to what Hamilton is viewed as now. It's like an upcoming booming city compared to somewhere that you could go where your rent would be cheaper.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. I just kind of honestly assumed most people were born and raised here that we know through the scene. I know there's a couple, but it's a hip-hop melting pot.
Yeah, man, exactly. Well, and for all musicians, because I can imagine, like, you know, a lot of people,
sure,
we are that music city, right? There's a vibe here, man. Like, there's a really great, it's amazing the amount, I mean, you say it even in, you know, 905, you drop it, right? It's amazing the amount of percentage of well-crafted artists and musicians,
for sure.
You know?
You know, I feel like it kind of scares me at times, not that it scares me, but I think about it often. Are we sort of losing that musical identity, though? And is that just something we paint on ourselves? Because, and this is across all genres, let's be real and look around. What's really happening in the city these days? I think things are a lot more independent and stuff, so I get that part. Even as far as going to see, like, rock bands and stuff, too, like, what is really left these days? At that time when I made the 905 song, and I was talking about Hamilton and, like, doing a lot of the research on the musical history of our city, that, I think, was, like, the prime, right? And that's really when we started to pop, not just hip-hop-wise, but you even had clubs like 77 doing their EDM and capitalizing on that market.
Dude, the downtown was bumping.
Then you had the core towns and
Hess.
Everywhere in Hess at the time. But, like, let's be real, if you really look at it, does this still exist? You know, like, even Absinthe at the time. Absinthe was popping up after concerts, but, like, pre-pandemic, let's forget about the pandemic when I talk about it.
I get what you mean.
Do we still have that musical identity or sort of been...
Well, no, I think that I get what you're saying because a part of the musical identity that we have comes from the ability to put out that music and perform it live, especially, you know, in our city.
Right.
But I mean, at the same time, I think that the artists are still putting out music and still kind of representing. So I think in that respect, you know, I mean, we've definitely been having a hard go. There's no question about that. We're not what we were, but I think when it comes to, like, the musicians, and there's still...
So, like, the way I look at it, though, is they've kind of painted Hamilton as, like, the music city, right? So, like, if you look at something in contrast, let's look at America, where, even if it's not that genre, it's Nashville, not the music capital of America, or they call it the musical capital of the world, Tennessee, I think.
Yeah.
So, I don't know for sure on that, but, you know, like, a lot of artists in the States and stuff would think, maybe not hip-hop per se, but think, like, yeah, I'm going to pack up my stuff, I'm going to move to Nashville because that's my best chance, right?
Yeah.
So I think, similarly, there was a lot of people in Canada who thought moving to Hamilton, because that's our music capital of Canada, if you ask me, and a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is there any opportunity for people to, like, really just pack up their shit if they're from Saskatchewan and say, look, I just want more eyes and stuff? Like, what would the game plan be by coming to Hamilton? That's what I'm more talking about. Like,
yeah, no, that's
a,
that's true, yeah.
Opportunity that doesn't actually exist here.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Plus, how many recording studios are left and still operational too now, on top of, you know, venues? So that, no, that's a very good point coming from that respect. And where I'm coming from is more so homegrown talent is still being produced.
Yeah.
I think for sure I hear what you're talking about. That makes a lot of sense. And especially because we can't even fill any of the venues that are left anyways. And especially now.
You know, what venues are even left?
Yeah. I mean, pre-pandemic, we might have had a chance with one. I mean, who knows? I hate to keep thinking about it. Facebook's been reminding me a lot of, you know.
Yeah, that's this week.
This week.
I got memories coming up today. about a year away from that, well, what I would call my return to hip-hop.
So, yeah, man. The open season show. That was going to start me off going more into, you know, the direction of running shows. And I was getting really excited about that, and that was a banger, man.
I'm really sad that Disney Hollywood's gone, man. That's a huge blow to the city, man. Because it's like, I don't know the direction I've been taking. Like, as you know, I actually, unfortunately, don't really talk to those people that much these days. Like, who even knows? Is Aspen ready to just jump in and be a live music venue again? Because for a while there, they weren't as and in live music happy as they had been in the past.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So the question becomes, can Abson jump in here right now and save the city? Because, you know, with this ain't Hollywood gone, that was a huge chunk of, don't quote me on this because I can't pretend like I frequented this ain't Hollywood a lot, and I did go there here and there. Did they not pretty much have live music almost every single night, I think?
Oh, you know, like, for the most part, they had something.
And that's what worries me.
For the most part, they had something, yeah.
In this city, to Aspen, Casbah,
the Doors,
and, you know?
Yeah.
Question mark, I don't know.
Exactly.
It's still cool, but like that, there's really nowhere in Hamilton, and that goes even further to that point, and there's nowhere in Hamilton that really supports hip-hop.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you where. Again, I'm not trying to throw shade at people.
No.
I'm sure there's venues who, on the surface, will say, yeah, we support hip-hop, but really, no one does.
No.
You know what I mean? No one in Hamilton still actively pursuing. I'm sure there's still, like, Aspen would work with hip-hop artists if it's the right artist and you go there. Yeah. But, like, in the day, dude, when I was doing shows, I was getting seeked out by the bar. Like, they were calling me, hey, we've heard about you guys. We really want you to do a show, this and that. Like, nowadays, dude, Casbah, maybe? I don't even know if Casbah likes hip-hop. I don't know.
That's something that I was seeing. Somebody was talking about, you know, when things do open up again, in whatever capacity, and we got venues and, you know, club owners that are trying to make people, an artist, pay, if that's the case, to flay kind of shit, or not paying them at all to perform, that ain't gonna fly going forward, because what has to happen is the artists have to, you know, stand up and equally say, like, look, you need us just as much as we need you. This is the thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're the ones that are also bringing in more people, and we're entertaining your people to stay longer and buy more drinks. You know what I mean? If they're not paying a ticket to see the show and it's just at a, you know, bar, then this is their way to stay longer, man. It's a performance.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. Or, I think there's just been a huge disconnect between performers
and
live news just over that part alone. I think about it all the time. Like, it's really cool how tight, of course, there's going to be, like, little beefs here and there between people. But one thing that I think is crazy about our city that's really underrated, it's how incredibly receptive artists are of each other around.
Yeah.
Especially in hip-hop, where hip-hop is, without a question, the most competitive genre of music. Like, competitive on, like, a me versus you level competitive type way.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there's hip-hop battles and all that type of shit. It's crazy to think how there's some people that I've been doing music with or talk to, like someone like you and shit, who are, like, my better friends than people that I went to high school with, because we've all been experiencing life together for 20 years. You know, we might not hang out all the time. Like, there's a lot of artists in this city who I consider, like, my legitimate friends. When have you ever been, oh, I can't go to this show because I don't know if this person... I've never.
Yeah.
Never.
Oh,
and never once in my 20 years in this hip-hop
I used to show up to shows by myself.
I'm afraid of confrontation, and that's not normal, bro.
Yeah.
I know it's obviously there's different hoods and different that account for that, but there's some places that you can't go to, like, a show without a gun on you. In the States, you know?
Yeah.
Like, shit like that, where it's like, bro, like, I've never, ever felt I couldn't go to a hip-hop show because I'm going to see... Like, even at a time like that, there was never... There were people who didn't like each other, but there wasn't enemies at shows,
no.
You know?
No, exactly, man, exactly. No, it's...
That's the coolest part of Hamilton hip-hop.
It is an amazing...
Even if the city's not looking, we're at least helping each other, you know?
It is an amazing collective community of people. Yeah, some people may not get along, you know, or whatever, but there's no beefing, there's no,
I couldn't name, of course it's a big city and there's probably a lot of rappers we've never heard of, but I couldn't in 20 years, could you name one rapper that fought another rapper in our city?
No.
Never.
Never. Like, if anything, it was other people ever fighting. If there was ever a fight at a show, it would be somebody else fighting somebody else because they were drunk.
I've never seen two crews go at each other, or two rappers, or someone who said something on a Facebook post. I think the closest that I ever saw was when RK went to Arcane's door.
Yeah.
You know? But even that was nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, but, like,
I do.
Know, like, that doesn't happen in Hamilton, bro.
No.
Like, don't like each other. And I'm sure, again, I'm sure there's probably maybe some a little more hood shows that we haven't been to that maybe shit like that happens.
Yeah.
But at least in our core Hamilton hip-hop community.
No.
Everyone gets along, bro, and everyone's legitimate friends.
Exactly,
not even
man.
Just like quick, hey, what's up? People will stop, talk, have a drink with you, sit with each other. Like, I would never feel a way about walking into a Hamilton hip hop show by myself.
Hell yeah, man.
Because I know that there's someone there that's more than an acquaintance.
To me, it's when I talk about the Steel Gold fam and like the whole, you know, alumni and all that, like that's exactly what I'm usually talking about. Is because that was like everybody was doing a lot of shows that, like, you and the High Cats were doing tons of shows, bringing people to the city. You know, even, you know, Detox was doing his thing, and, you know, and the Beat Binges, were bringing, you know, people to the city too. And, you know, Sam was doing her own, like, outside of that. But, you know, then Steel Gold kind of always felt like, all right, let's all kind of, like, meet up.
Yeah, and, that's exactly what it was.
And like, you know, we're going to either, you know, promote our next show or, you know, I'll just chill out and actually, you know, say what up. And yeah, like
Steel Gold was never really about trying to put someone on to blow them up. It was like a party by, not when I say us, obviously I wasn't involved Steel Gold, but what I say is by us for us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally, it was cool. You get the odd, you know, 20, 30, 40 people that might come off the street or here and there.
Yeah.
For the most part, it was just artists going, supporting each other, bringing their close group of friends.
Honestly, one of my favorite things next to the Cypher, usually on stage, but my next favorite thing was usually sitting out front having a smoke.
Oh, 100%.
Because everybody was talking.
Were you there at that Steel Goal when Transition, when the homeless guy came?
Yes, bro. Yes, I was right. Yes.
Bro, that was the best. The homeless guy came by to Transition, asked him for money. I remember Transition being like, are you hungry though, bro? Like, you buy food, you're not going to buy drugs? He's like, no, bro, I'm hungry. He's like, all right, like, I better not find in. Transition's totally like that, man.
Yeah.
Like, I better not find out you're buying drugs. Like, if you tell me you're hungry, you're hungry. Like, I could walk over to Pizza for you right now and buy you pizza. He's like, no, man, like, I'll go. He's like, all right, man, here's $10. Literally, this guy being an idiot starts trying to buy drugs across the street. So someone yells, guy takes off, and we actually followed the guy back to Gore Park there.
Yeah.
Found him in Gore Park, confronted him in Transition, said, dude, if you want food, be honest, I'm going to go take you to Pizza. Otherwise, give me my $10 back. And came back to Steel Gold. That was the best, dude.
That had me in stitches when that happened, man.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy's full of character, man.
He's full of care and character. You know what I mean? Like,
he's overall good, dude.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure chatting about all this. We've gone totally over, which is perfect. Anyways, and
I talk a lot, bro. So
nah, man, this is great. I'm sure there could have been hours more of to talk about, 100%. Dude, man, because there's a lot about this city. You know, I think maybe in the future when I'm doing some more things and when you guys got some more stuff out, I'll try to do like a group thing if we can get everybody together in live and get you and the High Cats and we'll do a group session kind of thing and have more of a panel discussion.
Sounds like a plan, my friend.
Yeah.
Gotta get Mitch in on some of this stuff too.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, man.
Just a quick little plug here. You can check us out on Instagram at the High Cats, no spaces or nothing. We're really trying to make a push on Instagram. Stay away from like the Facebook stuff. We're also the High Cats on Facebook. We do post there, but most of our stuff's through Instagram right now.
Yep.
If you go on all major streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Instagram Music, to add to your stories, we are at the High-Cats. Check us out on there. We put one of our old albums up. We released our first single, Clark Kent, which has actually made it onto quite a few playlists in the States, and which is super cool.
Yeah.
We have a new single, Roses, coming March 7th. I don't know when this interview is going to come out. It might already be past that. And then we also have a song called 420 that is dropping on 420. Then it looks like we'll probably be doing about a release a month. Probably at least up till summer, man, and hopefully well beyond that.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing, man. So go check us out everywhere. Show us a like, show us a share, you know, just a little bit of support from our city can help us in attaining the goals that we're trying to accomplish outside of Canada and outside of this little area here, man. So much love to everyone for the support.
Mad love.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, man. And hopefully, you know, by the summer, maybe there'll be an open season with some more high cats on the bill.
That would be fire, my friend.
Hell yeah.
For sure, buddy.
All right. All right. Well,
all right, bro. I'll catch you later, man.
Take care. Peace.
That was the Demons interview with Stealth Elements. Elements spelled ELEMENTZ. Thanks, Demon, for allowing me to broadcast these interviews. To hear more of them uncut, search Open Season Late Night on YouTube. You can also find Open Season Late Night, all one word, on Instagram, or Open Season Hip Hop Cypher on Facebook. The track taking y'all home is titled Every Night, performed by Zmeyev, and that's spelled Z-M-E-Y-E-V. For showtimes, links, and podcast, go to gammakrush.blogspot.ca. Yo.
This is Diana Panton. You're listening to 101.5 The Hawk.
Good evening. You're listening to Current Fantasy on The Hawk, CIOI, 101.5 FM in Hamilton. The show brings you a new, extended live off-the-floor modular and hardware synthesizer exploration every week. I turn on all my synths, make sure they're all in tune, press record, and just go for it. Last May, I was stuck at home for a bit. Not much else to do but make synthesizer music, right? The website Bandcamp, which is a fantastic resource.